Welcome to the Dating After Divorce podcast. I'm your host, Shade Curry, and I believe every divorced woman deserves a romantic relationship where she feels safe, loved, and cherished. You can create the most amazing life after divorce, and I will teach you how. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dating After Divorce podcast. It is good to be back. I've been off for a couple of weeks just doing some R&R and collecting myself and just really enjoying, taking some time to enjoy the summer. But I'm glad to be back. And I have a special treat for you with this episode back in July. I have with me my friend, coach, colleague, and fellow podcast host, Wendy Slonica, here in the Zoom room. And Wendy is a grief and emergence coach, and she is the host of, hang on, let me get the podcast name right. I covered it up. Emergence from Life's Biggest Obstacles. And if there's something that felt like one of life's biggest obstacles, it was divorce. So Wendy is here to tell her story and drop all the gems about how we can move through grief, heal, grow, emerge. Wendy, welcome to the podcast. It is a delight to have you here.
Hi, Shade. Hi, everybody. I'm thrilled and a half to be here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming. And tell the listeners who you are and what you do. What is an emergence coach? Like, we want to
know. Yeah. Thank you. This is pretty new to me as well. So emergence happened, like it was dropped on me divinely. Like, Wendy, I think grief, you've been working in grief and loss for 3 or 4 years now. And what I received was this word called emergence as a coach. It was in a mastermind. And it's with a coach that we share. And so like emergence just came to me in terms of, this is the direction. The idea here is that, yes, it's navigating change and shift and transformation, but it's also implying that there's another side. Like grief is not something we work through and just get stuck in and hang out in and camp out in for years. This is something we emerge from. This is something we can transcend, and this is not the destination. So let's keep going.
Yes. Oh, yes. I love that. I mean, that resonates so hard. I know that resonates with the listeners because like divorce is just such a journey with so many cycles of grieving and emerging and grieving and emerging. So that definitely hits home. But we're here to hear your story. And I'm going to be listening for all the like emergence in there because I bet there's a ton.
Ooh.
Have your own divorce story, your own relationship journey. Let's start with where you are. Like, what does relationship look like for you now? And then we'll talk about how you got here.
All right. Right now, relationship looks like married partnership with a rambunctious dog that, I don't know, like we don't have biological children, either one of us, but I'm married to a woman and she's amazing. And honestly, we met when I was 41 and we met in 12-step rooms. And so we each sort of got there. I was inside of a brand new program. It was called Al-Anon. It's still called Al-Anon, but like I was new to that. And the reason that I was there is I wanted a relationship. I had been sober for 6 years and I really wanted a relationship where I could be a responsible adult. Mm. Not more on that later.
Not the child or the parent, an adult.
Right, exactly. But also like, you know, make sure that I talk about the dating apps because I cannot, like, I'm not a responsible person when it comes to dating apps. Like that is a place where I put myself on restriction. No. So anyway, so we met and I was 40, 41. I was also doing things that I had never done before. Like I was a go-go dancer at 41. And that's when I met my wife, Jennifer. And it was not a full-time thing. It was just something I had never done before. And so I wanted to get up and do it. So I was doing that. I didn't meet her go-go dancing. I met her at Al-Anon. But honestly, when I look back, I was not ready for this relationship anytime before we met. Like, that would have been something that would have felt too good. Like I wasn't good enough for this kind of peace, for this kind of ease, for the effortlessness and the support that just comes easily in this one. I wasn't ready. I would have burned it down.
I hear that. How long have you been together?
We've been together. It'll be 14 years on next week.
Yeah. So this isn't new. This isn't a still trying it out. No, if you've had peace for 14 years, that's real.
And like I've grown and she's grown in her ways, but also in our ways since then. Like she's seen me move through a lot of different facets of career and shift around work. And I've been there and just supported, you know, her and us emotionally without getting in her business.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a thing.
Yeah. I know recently you celebrated 20 years sober.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
My journey into coaching started with a Christian 12-step program, Celebrate Recovery. So I definitely am with you on there with the 12 steps.
Thank you for telling me.
Absolutely. It was saved my life because I was like the day before I separated from my ex, I had no idea that I had codependency issues. So literally at 39/40, I was like, oh, look, my life is unmanageable. Interesting.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Over, but like, I mean, I guess we may as well start again. So tell us, you know, what brought you to that moment where you met Jennifer in Al-Anon?
What brought me to that moment? Oh, pretty much every single freaking day before that. My divorce story, actually, I think I'll just like head back there to the divorce story. I was married to a delightful man for 3 years. We were together a total of 8 years. And, you know, I started going to therapy and getting some counseling because I was afraid this was something that was just mine in my inner experience. I was afraid that my next step was going to be I was supposed to have a kid. And so I went to get some support just to like talk about that, process that. That had nothing to do with this lovely man who, like, that was the most I knew of love. And it was real and it was lovely. And then when I discovered, and it was like an epiphany awakening, I have grown up with the idea, this was not part of my growing up family, but my inside experience was everyone somewhere on the sexuality scale. So I happened to be somewhere that I had identified as a straight white woman for, you know, like most of my life until I had an experience where I was no longer able to deny like these feelings. It was like a wake-up call, and it had to do with one person that I had known for a long time, but saw in a different way. And I'm so proud that I didn't have to sleep with her in order to like confirm. It was just a knowing on me that was inside of me. And I was no longer able to deny that, like, wait a minute, this feels real. And what it looks like or what I should be doing is no longer in play. So the first person I told was my now ex-husband, and it was brutal. It was freaking awful. It was certainly not something I ever wanted to, Like, if I had known going into that relationship and marriage that I would one day be coming out as a lesbian, that is not something I would have done.
Yeah.
At all. So, you know, that I shortly after I came out, ended up having an opportunity to move to New York. So it was like, it all just came like to a head. I had lived most of my life in the Bay Area of California. Mm-hmm. And then I had an opportunity to move across the country and work in theater, which is where my undergrad is in. Yeah. And so there was just a lot of opportunity for change and identity shift. And so like, it was November when I moved across the country. I had been out of the house that we had shared for about 6 months, three, four, 6 months. I can't remember now. This was 2002. And moved across the country. That was culture shock. That was identity shift. That was grief and loss. My parents at the time were really struggling with, what do you mean? What are you talking about? You're coming, you're what? Yeah. And there was a lot of, it's just a phase sort of thing. That was discussed and then rediscussed and then, hey, let's discuss that again. Because
how old were you at this point?
Oh my God. What was I? 35?
Is that?
Yeah.
I love it.
They're can't possibly know my own self. No way.
But like, let's all weigh in here on her life choices that she's very sure about, but we're not sure about.
Right. It's just such a, like, something they never expected, something that was so shocking that they needed to go through and grieve. And I could not be there for them in that. Like, I got mine. And I finally, at some point, was like, listen, I can't talk about this anymore unless you're going to support me in whatever way.
Interesting that. And I don't want to put a name on it, like enmeshment or whatever, but I am a parent of, you know, grown children kind of on the cusp at this point. And I recognize that temptation to not see them as sovereign humans.
Yeah. You know,
like, we've been in this appropriately codependent relationship for 18 years where I'm in charge of all of your choices.
Responsible.
And all that. I'm responsible. I'm in charge. And, you know, we're working this out together. And without self-awareness or an understanding of appropriate relationships, individuation, it's very easy to just continue seeing your child in that light.
Right.
So at 35, it's like, well, yeah, we need to discuss this.
Do you wonder exactly how divorced women just like you are meeting eligible men who want a real relationship and a commitment? They're doing it by dating with their core values. Your core values are the GPS that lead you to the partner you've been looking for. When you use your core values on dating apps, text messages, and at social events, you will easily connect with your true match partner without chasing, settling, or wasting time with non-committal men. I have taught exactly how to do this in the 2-hour Core Values Dating Blueprint course available on my website, shadecurry.com/dating. That's shadecurry.com/dating. You will learn exactly how to identify your core values and use them on your dating profile, how to ask the right questions via text, and how to tell the right stories on dates, so that you attract the right people and repel those who aren't right for you. If you're ready to meet your true match, hop over to shadecurry.com/dating or click the link in the show notes. Now back to the episode.
Right, right. And so that, you know, like putting that in a way where actually nothing's wrong. This is simply a direction. This is a truth of mine that I am, and I'm going in this direction. I'm actually not asking for permission. This is where I'm going. And, you know, that certainly does have consequences. That certainly has, like, there was upheaval. There was a lot of confusion. There was hurt. And there was also just not knowing.
Yeah.
Plenty of not knowing.
Yeah. How did you feel? Because the, you know, I always reference the stress scale, mm-hmm. like the life incidents that have the highest number of points for stress, and divorce tends to have a cluster of them. So it's not just the one thing. So divorce by itself, I think, is the second highest, mm-hmm. but clustered around divorce is then moving, which is one of the top 10 as right. well. Changes right. in financial situation.
Completely.
There are like five that cluster around divorce. So like when you add up the stress points for divorce and everything mm-hmm. that goes with it, it tends to be like really, really high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were you experiencing?
Most of it, I was on such a, I felt like I had gone through some sort of transformation. It was like a deepening, but it was also a way for me to tell this truth that I'd never entertained or considered for myself. I was just always kind of like, okay, well, what am I supposed to be doing next versus what do I want next? Yeah. And so that kind of like overshadowed thought about like, what do other people think or what will other people say? This is not okay. There was that had felt so freeing. And in the middle of telling my truth, there were a lot of people who felt a lot of hurt and anger. Reasonably, 100% reasonably. Some of the challenging feelings didn't really come until later for me. And some of that has to do with, like, I had this whole new identity that I had never explored. There was a sense of more pleasure and presence in where I was going, right? So I had somewhere really, like, wild and incredible and new to go. And it was this whole culture that I was going to swim in. Mm. And so it was kind of like having another adolescence.
Interesting.
One where, like, I was clear and I was present and I, like, knew about some of my own working parts and what didn't work around yeah. partnership and intimacy and this sort of thing. But it was on a freer level.
Yeah.
Some of this also included a lot of shame when I was disclosing and coming out to people that that I hadn't known earlier, right? Like I there was no way I could have known earlier, and there was no way ultimately, eventually, that I should have known earlier. So when I let myself off the hook from that,
yeah,
that's where some real healing also began. That was just acceptance of my story and my path.
Yeah, that's powerful. So it sounds like the sort of the joy and freedom that came from, mm-hmm. hey, I'm fully being myself now, almost like ameliorated I'm moving across the country and taking the right. subway. And I don't know if you had to climb five flights of stairs to your apartment in New York, because that craziness happens over there. Like,
right.
You know, all of that happening, it almost seems like it balanced it out. I don't know. Does that sound true?
I would say, yeah, I think it was more like there was more to focus on that was unknown and exciting. Mm-hmm. I felt like things had been really opening up by me coming out and coming to this realization. But then also, you know, I could see and empathize with, you know, it was not an opening up for others. Like with my ex-husband, we ended up going to counseling to end the marriage. And so we hadn't been to counseling before. It was a perfectly excellent relationship. Like, we didn't fight. We didn't, you know, have a lot of problems around that relationship. It was super loving. And that's what I knew of love at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you went to counseling for that. That's just very conscious.
I was really proud of myself for that. I mean, that was something that, like, one, I'm really proud that I didn't sleep with the person that kind of, like, was a catalyst for my own awakening. I didn't sleep with him, her, him, them at this point. And I haven't really talked to them in a while either. So like, yeah, I was proud of that, but also going to counseling, either just to talk it out in a facilitated way or to end it. Mine was to, my priority was like, I want to end this well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what his was, other than I'm so glad he agreed to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. So what came next? You're in New York. You're living free.
Yeah.
Expanding. Yeah.
It's like wild. Like some of the things that just ridiculous. Like I moved in November. I drove across country. I moved to New York without a coat. I was like, oh, that's what Northern California people do, is like they move over and think, okay, let's just see what happens. And so let that just be the example of me going into the entire lesbian culture, right? I was there without a coat in November in New York. Oh, what? So much I didn't know, so much I didn't really like understand or get until mm-hmm. I had a lived experience. Primarily, this had to do with my first girlfriend, who like knew completely, had known my husband. We had known each other for a while. I had worked in theater when she lived in San Jose, and like we worked great together on backstage projects. And so that's how I got my first job in theater in New York. And honestly, that like I was coming out of a marriage and into a new, completely new identity. And then, you know, this person was looking for somebody for a very long term, like, please don't make me date again kind of relationship. And so when she asked me, hey, can I call you my girlfriend? My experience was, well, she's not asking to get married. So girlfriend means for me committed. And for me, that also meant monogamous. Mm-hmm. And it did not mean wife. However, like my experience of that in lesbian culture was like, it's closer to wife than girlfriend in that capacity. Hey. So that was a big learning curve around communication and like, what are we talking about exactly? Yeah. But I was in such an adolescent phase as well mm-hmm. that I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm hearing. Here's what I'm not hearing.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that it had, I think every, okay, so as a dating coach and I talking mm-hmm. to my clients, my listeners, and humans out in the world about dating, I don't think that's a, I think that's like a everybody thing. I think that's an adolescent thing.
Is it?
Literally, I have a moment in my program where I talk to people about understand frames of reference. Ensure that you mm-hmm. clarify frames of reference.
Right.
Because that's what that was. It's like huge in relationships,
so
huge. Good. And what there, you might be using the same words that could mean completely different things. Just, this is the perfect example mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. And so when my clients meet people, I'm always like, okay, so what do you, cause they, what they do is the other term that we then use is leapfrogging. So they hear something and then they leapfrog to the picture they have in their brain. And so my job as a coach is to say, okay, so he said he wanted to have kids with you mm-hmm. and you took that to mean he's committing to you and you're eventually going to get married and have kids. I said, so he said this, you leapfrog to that.
Mm.
What I would do is actually get curious. What do you mean by that?
Tell me more. Is there a timeline? What are we talking about?
And like, is this like have kids with me like tonight?
Right. Right.
Like
literally, what?
Yeah. Are you going off birth control? What was mm-hmm. happening?
And I thought we were at the amusement well. Park. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's a beautiful illustration of just understanding that frames of reference are important, especially if we're approaching relationships with a mature adult mind, where we don't assume what other people are saying, where we assume that other people are a universe unto themselves. Mm-hmm. And you want to get curious and know this person and what they're thinking and what they're saying means.
Amazing. This is also like when you were talking about the levels of stress, like all the things that you mentioned, Sade, were like also things that can spark feelings of grief and loss. Mm-hmm. Not only stress, but also grief and loss. So, you know, having that understanding about leapfrogging as well, it's not just a this thing, it's an everybody thing. Everybody has their own unique experiences of dating, of divorce, of loss, of all of it. It's kind of a wild crucible when we're talking about divorce and relationships, because they're so pinnacle for us. Like we do a lot of things in pinnacle relationships. So like they're pretty important. Yeah. I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. 100%. So you had your first relationship. Was mm-hmm. that, you knew her in person. When did you get on the dating apps?
Oh God. That was when I had moved to Seattle during my first year of sober recovery. And it was eating disorder recovery. I had ended up stopping drinking at the same time. So I think it was when I had moved to Seattle. There was another relationship that I had tried to have long-term when I moved from New York to Seattle. And it ended after like a year and a half-ish, 15 months, something. And I was devastated. Like I felt more heartbroken than during my divorce with this relationship that was less than half the time. Like it was the relationship that just I crumbled in. So fetal position frequently for a long time. I ended up going to try dance classes at the Century Ballroom, shout out, here in Seattle. So I could like meet people with appropriate touch and just sort of like not really get super attached, but also have some fun and get myself out of the house. Yeah. Dating apps were kind of around that period as well. And so it was a lot of spiked emotion for me. It was a lot of adrenalized, very playful, super flirty time for me. And I'm a writer as well. So like I can come across as like fun and hilarious and all those things. Part of the Gemini nature, I suppose. But I really was having so much fun with it. And at the same time, I was not my most mature self, not emotionally mature, not like it wasn't. I think I tried to date one or two people at a time, and that just blew up in my freaking face because most of the people that I were talking to were just really ready to have the one. Dating was not really a thing.
People are always like, well, nobody on the apps wants to commit. And then how people looking for the one
connection. No, they called it dating. Not really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated by that. And there's no, I don't have any scientific proof. I really just have experiential proof that who we connect with, who we find or who finds us on the apps, mm-hmm. is a reflection of the next thing we need to learn.
Right.
Right. And so a lot of my clients come in and they're like, well, I've been on the apps and all I get is this. And these are the people that like me. And I've swiped on 5,000 people. And I'm like, because they think that that means that there are no good people on the apps. Like no one who wants a commitment, no one who wants to run. Right. And what I end up teaching them is that, well, the reason like you had to swipe on 5,000 people and then still come and hire me is that you didn't learn, like
you didn't
take the learning from each one to the next one.
Right. Well, and this is similar to like when clients come to me and they're like, I've had the same pattern, the same issue over and over again. They may have like married and divorced the same sort of person and had the same patterns over and over again. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't see your own patterns. Like you can't, you just cannot no see way. Your own blind spots.
Yep.
You know, yep. This is why we read books. This is why mm-hmm. we listen to videos. This is why we have coaches and therapists to help us see, you know, those patterns. And when my clients finally see the patterns, like this is my favorite moment in coaching when I've had a woman, like, I'm like, okay, the next 10 dates, just do the swiping my way, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. do the evaluations my way, and let's see what happens. And it's always my favorite thing when they're like, oh, I see some of the criteria I was using to swipe left. Mm-hmm. Say no to some people had nothing to do with those people, because here I am dating this person who would have been a no before I worked with you. And they're actually not too bad. They're not the one, but they're not bad.
Right. Right. They're a one dateable date.
Yes. Versus the 25 horrible, creepy dates that they'd had before.
Yeah. Let's not have those. Yeah. Yeah.
So like with the people who like swiped on you and met you, they could take away the message, but like, everyone on here is here to just kind of chill and, you know, have fun and date multiple people. But, mm-hmm. you know, you could also be like, well, everybody here wants a girlfriend. I don't know what's happening.
Right. And for me, some of that too was I didn't know what I wanted. Like I used dating apps for like some of my like grief and loss as a distraction. So like, okay, I was avoiding my own feelings and let's go meet somebody new. That's a surefire way to meet the exact same person again.
Again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of people on the dating apps using them as distractions. I think it's all part of everybody's journey. I literally have no judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have, you know, women who are on the apps to see, will anybody like me for validation? I know men who go on there for validation. I know people who go on there for the relationship. There's mm-hmm. no judgment. There's just your journey.
100%.
My clients over and over. I'm like, yeah, of course, there's all kinds of people on the apps, but there's your journey and nothing can get in the way of that.
Right. Right. I think that would have been like useful for me at the time. This was like pre-swipe dating apps. Like there was no swiping happening. This is like long ago. So, you know, like if I had had a coach at that time where I was like, what are you getting on the apps for? Mm-hmm. What are you hoping for there? And then let's be sure that we're actually going after that, because that's what you want.
Yeah.
Versus
let's put that out there. We're here to check it out.
Right.
See what's up.
Right. Let's have like the intentional experiment, because one thing that I was like, oh, I don't really like how I behaved in some of those encounters. And at the same time, I got exactly what I needed every time.
Yeah.
To move on from
yes.
there.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love how you don't shame yourself for that.
Thank you.
That's so good. And, you know, this is what's, you know, and I just feel like the journey to maturity in relationships does require that experimentation, whatever that looks like for each people. You're mm-hmm. going to have to explore. Typically with my clients, depending on where they're at, if they haven't dated much before, I'm like, listen, your first 15 dates, we're gathering data and exploring. Okay. Please don't look for your husband in the first 15 dates. Let's just not marry. Yeah. Okay. Because if you married your middle school boyfriend or girlfriend mm-hmm. and stayed with them for 20 years and then got divorced 3 years ago, and then you're getting on the apps, like you have no data.
There's zero. There is zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that it's like, in many ways, like careers, this whole mm-hmm. relationship journey. Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a different kind of resume, like with the apps versus the other thing, but it, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
And you might have to try someone for size. Yeah. So did you get off the apps, or are you like, oh my God, people just want relationships. This is terrible. And I'm getting
I didn't like how I was feeling. I didn't like how I was behaving. I didn't like how I was obsessing. So I put myself on restriction. I'm like, No. If I'm not drinking, I'm also not apping, not dating apps. No, cannot.
Did it have an addictive flavor for you?
It felt like it, just in terms of the let's check again. Like, did somebody wink at me or smile at me or whatever the hell that they're doing now? Like, I didn't like the obsessive check-in aspect for me. Like, it took up a lot of my time. It took up a lot of my energy. And there was a point where it was really fun, but it was also, there was a point where I was really done.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You weren't looking for a relationship, but you were obsessing over what people, the validation from the people. Mm-hmm. What was that? What do you think that was?
That was, I was looking for approval or distraction in terms of flirtation. Like, like, yeah, okay, that's fun. What did you say? Okay, what did she say? Okay, what she, it was like, you know, my own personal soap opera a few different times. And I think I had a higher tolerance for drama as well.
Say that. Oh, I feel that. I feel that. You know, I have my own stories there. Like, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So it's okay that that happened. And that's true and real that that happened. I don't love every minute of that. Or, you know, I'm not proud of every bit of what I contributed to all of that. But no, like, there was also a point where I didn't like it anymore. I didn't like who I was anymore. I didn't like that I was only looking externally. Like, that was the distraction piece. Some of it was really fun. And I met some gorgeous, gorgeous people that I'm still in contact with. Yeah. But not everybody. And no.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you still had healing, because if, you know, you cut it off, like, it's like, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop being on the apps, but there's still a healing that has to be done to heal that desire for approval. How did you do that?
100. Oh, that's still happening.
Well,
that's still happening. Right. Right. So, like, for the most part, it was, okay, let's go with where I'm. Oh, that's such a good question. Before I, like, let me just think about that for a second, because yeah, yeah, that was all along. That was, how do I want to be? Who and how do I want to be? Mm-hmm. And that has nothing to do with anybody else. If nobody else was ever to give me like a wink or a smile or a whatever, or a right swipe or a yes, please. How would I want to be?
Yeah. Showing up as the person you want to be means that you have your own approval.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's something that Serena Hicks, our coach, has said recently and talked about, is like creating that safety inside.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yep. 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 So the more I was like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and take care of myself and just allow other people to come in and then also go as they desire, for me to like say what I desire or would prefer, and then be okay with being the person to take care of my own needs.
Oh, that's like a whole, that is, I know that's not enlightenment, but
it took a long time. Yeah. Yeah. And to be able to do that with somebody, I mean, it was amazing. Jennifer, my wife, and I, we speak the same language around like, what is that? Mm-hmm. It was so great. She told a story recently, just around somebody said to somebody else, like, what are you looking for in a relationship? I'm looking for security and safety and compassion and intimacy and da 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 and all these things. And the person looks to the other person who just gave that big litany and said, actually, the person that you're in a relationship with is giving you, you get love from them. All the rest of the things you just listed, that's on you to get for yourself.
Ooh.
Which was like, whoa.
He wants to hear that. It's like, wait, what? I don't want this to feel.
Yeah. So part of me is like, so that so resonates. And part of me also wants to vomit. So.
Yeah. I mean, and just to know that, like, even when we recognize that, I think the reason it feels so painful initially is because we've been conditioned that the opposite was supposed to happen. We've been working for the opposite. We've been hustling like we were told to.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm looking for the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hustle for the list. Like, I mean, I remember being told as a young person, okay, you got to know how to cook because you're going to need to know how to cook for your husband. You're going to know how to clean, like all the things. There were just all of these things. And so it's like, listen, if I'm doing all this, well, like, there better be this But I get paid.
Yeah. Where's the provider part? Yeah. Or where's that I'm conditioned?
The social status, the empathy, all of those things. And it's very transactional the way, and I think it's a global culture issue that we talk about relationships versus being taught to have that first relationship with ourselves.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If we started out with like actually having a relationship with ourselves, it would radically change so much, because it's radically changed like me post-divorce and now me mid-marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. I love that you talked about just that like desire for approval. I mean, a lot of what happens in my practice is helping my clients, those who have it, like not everyone, people come at different stages of their journey. Mm-hmm. It can take a little longer for people who are still really in the grasp of the desire for approval, the desire for security, or if they don't see their own personal value. And sometimes we have to do, I love to do the work at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that whenever that moment comes right there, they meet their person. Some people do all of that work before and then boom, they'll meet someone. I have a client who met her person in new record, less than 8 weeks.
Well done, persons. Oh, that's exciting.
I'm like, 8 weeks. I was like, I'm not advertising that. I'm going to tell your story, but I am not going to put that on my messaging because I don't know.
Right. That's a big promise. Yeah.
That's a big, big promise. But, yeah, but I recognize that the level of that undercurrent of approval or security, the level that a person comes with often determines the length of that journey.
Wow. Yeah. That totally makes sense. And, you know, like we can like want and need approval, but like having it from the inside is way different than like trying to make it happen externally.
Yeah, I'm trying to get somebody else who's not thinking about you or only thinking about you a small portion of the time if they actually love you.
Oh my gosh.
Feel this deep need that you have. Like the best person to do it that you can rely on to do it every time is yourself.
Right. Right. Like, somebody's dying of thirst and walking around with a water bottle on them. And then they're looking for water everywhere else, but like the bottle they already have.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes. Totally. Oh my gosh. That's so good. So good. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of coming to the end of our conversation. Like, is there any part of your story that you feel like we haven't touched on that could really be of value to the listeners?
You know, I have a story. I'm not super proud of it, but I think it would really be illustrative just based on what we've been talking about around self-sufficiency and sovereignty versus expectations externally. Part of when I was going to salsa dance class to learn how to do some social dancing, which I love, I signed up to be a follow. So there's a lead. And then there's the follow in social dancing. And so I signed up to be a follow. I'm pretty much like charge ahead sort of person. And so I took it on as a follow, kind of as a like spiritual experiment. Like I was early in recovery. Could I actually follow? This has to do with surrender, right? This has to do with relinquishment of control. And there was a person, I will never forget this. And she was a lead, and we were paired up for a dance, and she looked at me mid whatever, I don't know what mid song is, I guess. And she's like, you know, you're leading yourself here, right? Like, it was like, I had such a strong sense of like, wanting to retain control that I was doing something called backleading. Not proud of this, but like my, like, okay, I'm paired up with you as the lead and I'm the follow, but I'm going to make it look like hashtag manipulation. I'm going to make it look like and seem like we're doing what you want to do. No, she said, you know, you're leading yourself here. I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. Right. Like I was able to say that immediately in the moment.
Yeah.
But that was also my experiment of like, okay, Wendy, that really showed me a lot about how my back leading, and I was doing it in more than dating. Like I wanted control. I wanted a certain outcome. I wanted to make it happen. I was taught to do that. And that's was not working in that dance relationship. I'm so grateful to that person. I will never forget that story.
Yeah. Yeah. That awareness. I love your awareness in the moment. You're like, yep, you caught me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. And yeah. I love how like we think people don't notice.
Oh gosh. They can feel it. Oh my gosh. If you had somebody who was backleading you and manipulating you when you're like trying to dance with them, like up close and you're in their arms or they're in your like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're gonna know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to find another word for it for manipulation sounds really malicious and negative.
It does.
You know, and most people are really just trying to like, I don't know, keep themselves safe.
Yeah. Agree.
In the search for approval or like wanting to retain control, wanting to protect themselves.
Uh-huh.
And then we're doing this thing where we're giving off this fake energy.
Yep.
And hoping or thinking or believing that people don't notice. And I'm constantly telling my clients, listen, they notice, like we've got to work on the energy. We've got to make sure that the energy that you are stepping out into this date with is real and right. True and true to you. Because if you are saying yes to everything the man talks about, because you really like him and you want him to like you, he may not consciously feel it, but he will feel it subconsciously.
Right.
Right. And so yeah. We got to work on that. Like we got to work on like who you are when you are in your home is the same person that you are. And you're good with that.
Right. Well, and some of that too, like, you know, my awareness was very limited for a long, long time because it wasn't safe for me to like, to be out. Like I was straight until I was out and then I was out and that was it. So, you know, being good with what you're aware of in the moment, because yeah. You're going to get aware of more if you want to.
Yeah.
You totally will.
Yeah. Amazing. Like just having that compassion for yourself, wherever you are doing the work, but being like, yep, here's where I am. Even being able to laugh at it. I remember that from my recovery days, like myself and the other women, we just laughed. We were just like,
oh my gosh, so needed.
Just point out all of our like behaviors.
That was mine.
Yeah. Now it's so fun. It wasn't so fun then. We
totally
we
not
had to do that to survive it. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. To identify it though. I mean, that's healing too. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. I want to ask a little more about your work. Like when clients come to work with you, what's usually like the, where are they usually? What are the triggers that say, hey, I gotta work with Wendy. You gotta give her a call.
Thank you. Sometimes it has to do with shock and I need like some sort of immediate support. There was a person who came to me when somebody had asked her partner of 8 years had asked her for a divorce that she did not want. And so coming to terms with that, it was like the initial shock. It's never too early to begin grief healing. And that is an excellent place of support. What else also happens is like we carry along lots of things that we haven't processed emotionally. And so sometimes it's a move, sometimes it's a divorce, sometimes somebody died. Death and divorce are the two big D's in terms of like the biggest causes for grief and loss feelings.
Yeah.
But there are 40 plus other plain old life events that can bring about grief and loss. So we like kind of pack them in. We've been taught to do that, conditioned to do that. So a lot of times it's several changes that have happened in succession and then the family pet dies and they're mm-hmm. like, I'm done. I need some help and support immediately because I can't handle that Blackie died or that, you know, yeah. my parrot died or whatever it is. Like sometimes it's just the capper.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, And I know you were supposed to be telling them we were going to be wrapping up, but grief is like a huge part of like, you know, my journey and my clients' work. Recognizing that, like, in some ways, grief is part of living. We're constantly experiencing loss.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Because we're constantly experiencing change.
Yes. It's just that
we are so like, you know, how does it look? And I really want the fun ones. So I don't have time for the ones that are going to, quote unquote, drag me down until you can't deny them anymore. And that's been my journey again and again and again.
Yeah. And then what does the after look like? So after they've worked with you, what are the outcomes that typically you are shooting for?
Yeah, usually here's the thing, like in my work with people, wins and momentum happen immediately. So people can start to feel a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And that little bit better gains momentum. So what I tend to shoot for is a sense of spaciousness and capacity. Like when I was in the like deepest part of my grief journey, I was at a place where I was like, listen, life, nothing else better happen because I can't handle it. Mm-hmm. And life doesn't really negotiate like that. Yep. So I needed to do something different. And then that was on me. So when I was at that point of my life was getting so small that I wanted to be just available for fun and laughing. And I wanted to experience, you know, just plain old life as being either okay or above okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I was shooting for personally. What I tend to shoot for now is like a sense of peace and knowing and capacity. And we're not trying to talk anybody out of their feelings that they're having, but we're also going to acknowledge that this is not the destination. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, love it. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your work with the listeners. Really appreciate it.
So, so great. I'm so pleased and grateful that you asked. Thank you, Sade.
You're welcome. All right, listeners, this has been such a good one. I just feel so much like joy from this conversation. Just it's really validated. There's so many parts of my own experience. So this is, I want to encourage you to follow Wendy. Her social media handles and her podcast link will be in the show notes. We all experience grief, so her work and her message, I think, will be applicable to all of us. We want to thank you for your time and attention, and we will see you next time. Thanks, Wendy. Thanks for listening today. If you are ready to get married after divorce, I want to invite you to download my free 8-video training, specifically designed to help divorced women date with ease and get married again. Head over to shadecurry.com to get started. That's SadeCurry.com. I'll see you inside.